April 1st, 1979, talking to Stanley Dale in Manly Hot Springs, tape number two.
Okay. That's me and we're going on up the Troublesome Creek and Prospect. A guy, Rampart, built that cabin, was trapping there. Jack McKenty was his name. We just stopped in there along the trail. And
what year was that?
Not in the first year, that fall, 1933, is in the country.
Okay, 68.
That's me and a guy, Lee Sickle. We went down to, was going down to Grand Creek. Below Tanana, there was a prospect outfit prospecting some ground down there. I forget the name of the company. It's a big outfit.
What year is this?
About 37, I think. I think that's 37, 38.
This one, there's information in the back, so all you gotta ask is something like, how it was you got to be standing there? Or,
okay. You know, number 69. Okay. So,
well, that's the year we floated down the Beaver. That was the other guy that was with us. This guy was from Minnesota, Henderson, Minnesota. Leo Elg was his name. Mm-hmm. Then he worked here on a dredge on American Creek. We called him American Creek Shorty. And that's Tom, and that's me. That's taken in front of, and Beaver, Frank Yasuti's cabin. Oh. He was the Jap at the trading post there then.
Mm-hmm. Did a lot of people have nicknames?
Oh, there was a lot of different guys.
Did you have nicknames?
No. But there's all kinds of characters.
Number 70.
One year when I was trapping up the river here, 1934.
That was your first winter up here?
Second winter.
How'd you do that year?
There wasn't much fur around that winter, but I caught enough to live.
Number 71.
This was a guy, I forget his name, is working on a survey there on a Richardson Highway. They're surveying homesteads. My brother took that picture. He was one of the crew, worked in the crew. Mm-hmm.
Looks like mosquitoes are bothering
you. Yeah, there's, I guess, a lot of them around there in that swampy country.
Mm-hmm. Number 72.
That's the same picture, you know, we looked at. I don't know, that's...
Right. Right, the same one that he didn't know.
Scratch. Try another 72.
Okay. 72, take two.
All right, I'll just for 72 right here.
Okay, 72.
That's when they was on that survey, you know, that Army survey, Sonome, load of oil fuel barrels.
That was that one your brother was working
on? Yeah.
So a lot of these photographs are ones that he took too, huh?
Yeah, there was a lot of these pictures he took that I don't...
Wild Western.
73.
Oh, that was a guy in Washington, the friend. He had a couple of six shooters strapped on, just goofing around. He's out target practicing.
Is that it?
74.
That's my brother. We're, that's taken over there at the head of, that's on the pass between going into head of the Hootenanna and Flat, what they call Flat Creek. There's a divide in there, is coming down into Caribou Creek. We're coming from the West Fork. There's another guy with us, Jim Ryder. He's a, he was trapping on the Hootenanna.
Okay, this is negative number 75.
I don't know what this is.
Looks like some kind of a core or something. Drill, auger, big auger.
That ain't me taking up there. Oh, yeah, that's when we were marking the trail when I was working for up north at a Dead Horse. We was marking the trail. We was on the ice for the trucks to follow from Beachy Point to Tululuk, I think they call that site. It's 25 miles on the ice. We went, and they were, we were putting the markers every, so when the storm truckers could follow, they was hauling the drill, the big rig, the oil rig. When the storm truckers could follow, they was hauling the drill, the big rig, the oil rig. And that's, we used to drilling holes in the ice and putting these markers in, you know, so when they hit a storm, they could follow them. They're close together, you know, how the storms get pretty bad up there. So they wouldn't get lost.
That's all.
Yeah.
Just book newspaper.
Mm-hmm. Tuesday, April 3rd, 1979, talking to Stanley Dale in Manly Hot Springs.
Like one of the things that we're kind of interested in are stories about different events that happened, or stories about different people. You know, like if one guy had a, you know, had some kind of a deal with a cat or something like that, or some guy trapping, some adventure story that happened to him, maybe, or some detail about, you know, like you're saying about the snow and moose standing in your trail and mm-hmm. what happens when you come across something like that. So if, whenever something like that comes up that you think about, we just stick it in, you know, and we'll sort it out later.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, I thought maybe we could just talk about when you had first gone to Livengood and maybe describing a little more what Livengood was like then and what you were doing. And
well, yeah. Well, when we come over from Rampart, of course, to Livengood, that was in winter 1934, you know, in Livengood was a pretty big camp then. There was a lot of people around there, and they were doing a lot of mining there, drift mining. And They were also, that's the year, well, that year they start in the year working on a road from Fairbanks to Livengood, you know. And there were still all the old timers around there, you know, Jay Livengood, he was still there mining. The guy, they named the town after, and Teddy Hudson, they were the discoveries of the camp, you know, Jay and Teddy Hudson. And then all the Hudsons was around there. There was three, four brothers, Jim and Teddy and Cliff, and then Albert, and he was in a freighting business. He had horses. He was hauling freight from Dunbar to him, and he had a partner there. And they hauled wood, you know, to the drift, to these miners that was drifting, you know, Livengood and Spall. They were drift mining, and a guy by the name of Tony Silver, and then Tony Benny, and there's Anderson, Anderson and Peterson, and you know, that's, they worked year round, you know, in the drifts. And then, of course, in the summer, there was a lot of them small cricks that they were working on, Root Creek and Lillian and Amy Creek and all them, Wilbur Creek. That was all open cut work, plaster, of course.
Just what would they do when they were doing drifting?
Well, they had to tar the ground. What they used to do is tar the ground. They used points, you know, drove points, and these wood steamed it, and then they hoisted the ground dirt up, and they made a dump. And then when the water run in the spring of the year, when they snow melted it and that, they'd sluice it, you know. But then they'd, some of them worked all summer long. They'd had water, and they'd work underground, and they'd dump right in their sluice boxes, you know, had a big dump box and sluice.
Well, how big a shaft is this that would be going down then?
Well, they'd have what they call a work shaft. I don't know, a different size, probably 8x8 or 6x8, and then they'd hoist. It was deep ground, you know, some of that 100 feet deep or something like that. So maybe some of it was deeper and some would be shallower, but it was all froze, you know, all through frost and all.
So they would go down to bedrock or something?
Yeah, you got to get right down on bedrock. That's where your money was, your pay.
How'd they sink these shafts?
Well, they use steam. You drive these points, you know, and you tar the ground. You'd have to put your points, and then you tar the ground for several hours. And when it thawed out, then it was loose, you know. Then you picked it out, and you hoisted it out, got it out. And
how long would it take them to, you know, average shaft? How long would it take them to?
Well, all depends, you know. Some ground was easier than others, where it was some place where it was muck, you know, or a lot of places it would be gravel, you know. And all depends how it thawed, you know, too, you know, how long it took. Sometimes the ground would thaw harder, you know, than others. It was easy, and some would be harder.
It'd take all winter to get down?
It wouldn't take too long, you know. But it was quite a bit of work. Like the work shafts, they had to crib everything, you know, they cribbed it all the way down to bedrock. But then when they got down to bedrock, you know, the ground was all froze. Once in a while, they'd have to crib in there, you know, put cribbing in that to hold up the, where it would keep caving in on them.
Were there many accidents?
Well, there wasn't too many, but once in a while, you know, they'd have something would come down on a guy's head or something. But it wasn't there.
Anybody ever get trapped on those things?
Well, I don't know if in my time, but anybody ever getting trapped. But one time in Onlis, there long before, when they were Fairbanks, it just hit when they were drift mining in Onlis, there was a bunch got trapped. The shaft caved in, but they rescued them all. They got them all out. They took a drill and they drilled, and they knew where they was in this tunnel, and they took another drill and they drilled down their big 6-inch drill, I think it was, and so they could get air down there. And then they took and let stuff down to them, candles, I guess, and food and everything. And while they were cleaning out, digging another shaft, they worked day and night, you know, worked, and they rescued a whole bunch. That was before my time, you know, but I hear him talking about it. In fact, I know the driller, Walter Fisher, was one of them.
That was a deep
hole. Yeah, I think it was around 100 feet somewhere in there. But I guess they put that down and nothing flat, clean out that old shaft or put another one down. I forget what they done.
Taking a few days to do it?
Well, yeah, you don't do that in, you know, it takes time going that deep in that tall on your ground. And just how long it took them, I don't know, but it takes time.
People ever hit water and have their shaft fill up?
Well, yeah, a lot of times you'll hit live water and your shaft will fill up, you know, on you. Sometimes you can pump it out, like around here in Woodchop or in them places, you know, but then a lot of times it's too much water. You can't pump it out to hit water, or there'll be work around, the water will come in on them from a different place, you know, and it's, you got to give up, move out.
There's nothing you can do about it.
No, you can't. If it don't come in too fast, you can always get pumps, you know, to handle it. But if it comes in too much, you can't do nothing about it. You just got to get out.
Anybody ever put, like, oil or kerosene on the walls or something like that to stop water? You ever hear something like that?
To what?
Put something on the walls like kerosene or oil or something like that on the walls and have that stop the water from coming in?
Well, I don't know. I never heard of that.
Oh, I just wondered because I heard of that from one guy and it didn't sound
good. I don't know. That don't sound to me putting kerosene. I don't know where that would stop the water. If it's cement or something, I gotta believe it. But that don't sound to me at the...
Well, you know, I hear all kinds of stories.
Well, a lot of these shafts, you hit the water just boils up, you know. Sometimes working in them shafts, they're just lucky to get out. You know, it comes in so fast, it hit like an underground river, I guess. They can't even get their tools out. They got to get out, you know.
So, in Live and Good, what was it like when somebody... cleaned up, you know, anybody ever celebrate about cleaning up, or was it just kind of
Well, no, they'd have their cleanups, and of course, when they'd pay the crew off or something, whatever they wanted to do, you know, they'd maybe, but they never know, it's just one of them things, you know, just cleaned up, and that was... See, a lot of times there, they couldn't, you'd work and they couldn't pay the crew till in the spring of the year when they sluiced their dump, you know, and then they pay the crew, you know, and they got the gold. They used to call that bedrock pay. If you made it, you got paid off. If you didn't make it, well, you got your room and board. That was it. There was a lot of that when I first come around here.
Kind of risky working.
Yeah, well, it was. You're taking a chance. Some places was good and they'd make it. And there was a lot of guys that didn't get paid up and they just didn't make it. Because you went to work with that understanding too, you know. If you didn't make it, well, you was out your labor.
Well, what if they struck it bigger than they thought? Would they pay extra?
No, you just got your wages. That was it. That's all.
Is that what you and Frank did when you went over?
No, we was on our own. We had this layoff in a guy off in Gene Swanson. We paid him 10% or whatever we took out, you know.
So that was his claim you were
working? Yeah, it was his claim, yeah. He just...
About how many people were in Live and Good then?
Well, there was a lot of that going on in the country, too. Guys owned the claim. The layman is what they called them, you know. They'd give you a lay on the ground, and a lot of the ground was good. You know, a lot of guys made money, too, you know. And then it was good for the guy that owned the ground, too, you know. He got his cut, and he didn't even have to do anything, you know. The guy, that was used to be about 10 to 15%, you know, they pay... Some was a little cheap, 8%, and then some places where the ground was real good, they knew it was good, you know, it was good ground, the royalty would go up.
So what was the first thing you did when you got to Live and Good?
Well, I hung around there, and then I went work on for the old road commission. Worked on a road.
That was the one towards Fairbanks.
Yeah, it was slashing the right of way, then cutting, logging off all the brush and timber. You know, there wasn't too many. There was very few bulldozers around. Old road commission had a few, and we cut everything off and burnt it up. You know, and then they pulled the stumps out with cats, of course, and that, you know, and then used graders. And
so you're the guy responsible for all the twists in that road?
Well, I don't know. I worked on a survey there, and it seemed like wherever there was a straight stretch, they'd find a place to put a curve in it. Well, them days, you know, they didn't have the machinery, you know, to build the roads. You know, they had to get away from all them soft spots, and they had to angle around all over it, like now with all these big cats and scrapers and 20, 30-yard dumps. And it was a different deal at that time. They never had nothing like that, you know. Lots of handwork.
But how long would it take to, you know, clear out for, say, 1 mile of road?
Well, that's hard to say. You know, it all depends how heavy it was. You know, a lot of places in this country, just that small stuff, you'd go through that like nothing, you know. Then where you hit heavier timber, well, you slow down. But we didn't have no chainsaws or nothing then, you know. It's all axe work or with bucking saws, and put it in piles, and we burnt it up, you know.
So say in a week, how far would you expect to go?
Well, I couldn't, wherever you, it all depends. It all depends on your crew and that. See, the camp I was in, there was only about 6-7 of us guys in this one camp. And then there were some big camps, you know, and of course we worked on it right away. They had their camps strung all along the road, you know. They hauled their stuff in the winter with the cats, and they made built cabins a lot of places. In a lot of places, they lived in tents, and that's hard to say, you know. You could, where you had just brush, you know, you'd go like mad through that, but then where you hit the big timber, you didn't go very fast.
You'd be camping there for a while, huh?
Well, you can imagine, you know, you have to chop or stick everything down and burn it up as you went along. You have to keep your fires going. And
so would you move your camp every once
in a while? No, we never moved the camps, no. They work both ways from, and then there'd be another camp.
So you just go
out. But then they'd, if too far away, yeah. But you'd go walk a long way, you know, before they'd move a camp.
So is that in the wintertime you were working?
Yeah, and they worked in the winter, and we worked in the spring, and then they worked all summer. And, of course, the grade work, and that was all in the summer. But that logging, you know, logging the clearing the right of way, that was all. Well, a lot of it was winter work they done in the summer too.
So when did you start working? You know, you and Frank start prospecting on your own.
Well, I even the first winter we were here, when we was up there on Troublesome and around Quail Creek, and there we were prospecting. Mm-hmm. We're doing a little trapping. Prospecting too. Of course, we didn't find anything, but sinking hold, you know.
But in Live and Good, when did you start doing that?
Well, when I went over to Live and Good, I'd done a lot of prospecting on the West Fork, but I never did right in Live and Good. I worked around there, different places. I worked on Amy Creek, and then I worked for Live and Good and Spall one spring, sluicing a dump for a while. And then, of course, that was through different years, you know.
People always talk about how honest the miners were. Now, you could just, if you found gold and stuff like that, even if you had gold right in your cabin, you could just leave it there and people wouldn't bother.
Well, there wasn't nothing like that too much places, I suppose there was. But, you know, what do you mean, stealing the gold and stuff like that?
Right.
But I don't know if anybody around here ever their boxes was robbed or never had it happen anyway. Oh, I guess once in a while somebody was picking in them, I suppose. They didn't know about it.
Guys were pretty honest, though.
But there was no out-and-out holdups or anything like that. I never heard of any anyway. But there was a lot of, I imagine, I've heard a lot of stories where, you know, guys is beating the royalty and stuff like that, you know, getting in the boxes before they'd have a cleanup, you know, so they wouldn't have to pay. There was stuff like that going on, I guess. But I never been around any of it, but I just hear guys talking about it, you know, that claim they knew, you know.
Mm-hmm. But people didn't have to, like, lock the doors in their cabins, huh?
Well, I don't ever know of anybody locking their doors up or anything. That everything was always open, you know. Like when I around here for years, you know, nobody ever fooled around locking their doors or anything.
So what happened after you worked for the road commission?
Well, after I quit there, then I boomed around prospecting, you know, then I trapped in the winter and cut wood and worked in some of the mines now and then, you know, and try to work on my own. And
what was it like in a camp with a bunch of guys working on a mine? Say you had a crew of, well, I don't know, whatever size crew you'd have.
Well, they, you know, more generally, everybody was pretty good guys in them camps, you know. Of course, you found always would find somebody that was too easy to get along with. Or but as a rule, most of the guys is, where can you go and find a bunch of men working together and they'll all get along with anybody, you know, that, you know, I have worked in places where there wasn't too many guys and all real good fellas, you know, got along good.
Well, what sort of things would guys do to just for fun when they're working like that?
Well, there was you get out, there was nothing to do. You worked there and at night, well, they probably played a little cards and you done your own washed your own clothes and stuff like that, or went out. If there was any fishing or close, you went fishing or something, you know, or in the fall hunting maybe. Or there was, like around here, there was no road, too many roads or cars or not. Nobody had any cars. Like in light, when I first was in Livengood, there was one, let's see, there was two cars there, I think, and they were. One, they flew in with it and took it apart, an old Model T Ford. There was a guy there, he was a wireless operator, had it. He was Bob, he was still in the Army with the old Signal Corps. I can't remember his last name, and he had an old Model T Ford, and he put it together, and there was just a few roads right around town there, didn't amount to nothing. And then, another guy had an old Chevrolet there, Luther Hess. He used to be the banker, and he had a lot of ground around there. That was the only cars around there.
Of course, there was no,
huh?
Where would they drive to?
There was no place to drive. They just round town, and they had a few miles of road up to Livengood Creek. I don't know how many miles, not very many miles. 2-3 miles, I guess, or 4 or 5 miles. It wasn't very far anyway. Huh. There was no roads.
So that guy was the banker, huh?
Well, one guy, he was connected, Luther Hess. He had a lot of ground there, too. He had a lot of ground around there. Well, then this Bob, I can't think of his name, too. He had this old Model T.
Well, what kind of things did the guys talk about they wanted to do? I mean, if all they could do was wash their clothes and play cards.
Well, that's all there was. Them days, you was either a miner or a trapper or something, you know, or prospecting, you know. That was the main conversation, you know.
Mostly you'd talk about where you're going to go or...
Well, yeah, guys, you know, at that time when I first come here, people stayed all the time in the country. Most of them did, you know. Then in a winter, after they'd buy, get a grub stake, they'd go out and sink old prospect. You know, a couple guys would maybe go together, or one guy would go by himself, or then a lot of guys would trap, you know, go out trapping. And then a lot of them would, like around where they had this drift ground, they'd go out, cut wood or something for their, sell it to the guys that was drift mining. And then, of course, the town had to have lots of wood too, you know. They'd sell a lot of wood around the town.
Did places get kind of logged off then?
Hmm?
Did places get logged
off? Oh, yeah. You'd have to keep, especially... where they was doing drift mining, you know, that took a lot of wood, cordwood, like around Livengood. They had to go quite a ways there in late years, quite a ways back, you know. Well, same way you're like at Woodchopper, they around Woodchopper, the old camp, they had to go quite a ways, you know, several miles from.
Did it cut down all the trees for
several miles? They take everything, you know, spruce and birch, and of course they had to. Cut it for a year ahead, a lot of them, so it's dry, you know.
What size trees they take?
Take everything, anything that made wood, you know, from 4 or 5, 3, 4 inches to whatever size it was, you know. Of course, it don't grow too big here. They didn't take much cottonwood. They didn't go for cottonwood much. Birch and spruce.
What was the matter with cottonwood?
Well, they just didn't hold the fire, burn up too fast, they figured. It's other word is last longer.
How many cords would a drift mine take?
Oh, a lot of these, they couple hundred cords a year anyway, you know, at least that, you know, where there's and more. It took a lot of wood, you know, to steam, and then you had to have all their hoist was run by steam too, you know, when they were hoisting out of the holes when they wasn't tawing ground.
So the guys had to be pretty good mechanics too, be around all that
equipment. Well, those guys knew the, you know, the mechanics, same as and that stuff, boilers and hoist and all that, same as they have now, you know, around cars and cats and.
But were there guys that were just specializing in mechanics and have little shops or something like that set up?
Well, no, right on the job, the guy probably running the hoist, there wasn't much as a mechanic, blacksmith, you know, how to sharpen the picks, and more generally, the guy is running the hoist, he'd be a blacksmith, and he knew everything about the engine, you know, steam. He done all the repairs. As a rule, you know, of course, there's a lot of guys knew that stuff, too, you know, they didn't exactly have to be running the hoist, you know, they...
People have a lot of discussions on what's the best way to do something.
Well, when you was drift mining, there was only practically one way to doing it, and there wasn't much you could change it, you know.
You know, I was wondering about that road too that you're working on. Like, why did they decide to build a road? Like, somebody have a lot of pull to get that road built? Or?
Well, probably one reason why they built the road, then, you know, there was a lot of mining around there. It was hard to get supplies in there to start with. You know, they had to, they'd freight them in there in the winter from Dunbar. And then at one time, they'd come go down and come up to Tolovana, and they had a tram. Then they'd go to the log jam and transfer it over the log jam, and then they'd put it on another boat and take it to what they call the terminal, another place about 10 miles from Ivangood. Then they had a car. They had a old 1919 Dodge there with big rims on, and they had this railroad just running on 2x6s, and they'd pull 2-3 little trailers behind them. And but most of their stuff would come in there in the winter, a lot of it by over the Dunbar Trail with teams, horses. And then in late years, when the cats come around, Maxie Miller from Fairbanks, he was freighting in there with an old 30 gas cat. And then that's about the time they start working on that road. And then this Live and Good Plaster started up. They come in there. That is, they were figuring on, they bought up a lot of that ground and prospected there. Then they was figuring on bringing this, putting a dredge in there. And then they was working, like, might have helped to bring that road in there. I don't know. Of course, the dredge come in there later. But the road was mostly to get supplies in there, same as any place.
Could you guess about how many people were all around that area?
Oh, I imagine at that time there must have been. I bet probably 400 people, I think, through that area there. 300 anyway. There was quite a few people there. They stayed, most of them stayed year round, you know. They didn't, few would go outside, you know, in the winter. They worked, stayed around there.
Were there any holidays that everybody would take off?
Well, they had their holidays, yeah. They'd shut down on Christmas and all, but they never stopped for too many holidays, you know, in them days.
What was Christmas like?
Well, they all celebrated, had big feeds and, you know, stuff like that. Get boozed up, drunked up.
Yeah. Did all the miners get together, or just every?
They had a big hall there. They'd have dances and dance and.
They'd have a dance, huh?
Oh yeah, there was always a few women around, you know. Never with many, but they'd have something going on.
You have to stand in line to dance with
them? Well, I don't know. I didn't go to do many of the on it myself at that time, but. There was always population of women was a shortage, you know. There were a lot of men, but there wasn't too many women around no place. There just wasn't a lot of women around the country them days. Then later and later years, they start, you know, more coming in.
The fact that there are so few women, would that start fights really easy?
No, I don't think there wasn't none of that, too much of that. I can't remember any ever. In fact, I never hung around the towns too much when I was in them, you know, and that, but I never hung around much. I was always in a winter trapping, and I didn't come in too often.
Mm-hmm. Do you like it better not being in town?
Well, I just didn't care about towns then, you know. I was young and I was out there wanting to trap, run around in the hills, or even in the summer I was going all the time, you know, running around.
Were there many other guys doing that?
Oh, there were a lot of guys, a lot of trappers and prospectors. They went out, they didn't come in. There was no roads or nothing, you know, and they'd be out quite a ways. You wasn't coming in town in the winter, you know, every week or every, like now where you got roads there, and every night or with car, good cars, it just takes you. Those guys that go out 8, 10, 15 miles, some of them wouldn't come in all summer. They stay out there all summer working. They never come in.
Were they working real hard?
Well, you worked hard. You had to put in a good shift them days. You didn't stand around, and at that time, everybody had to work.
How about 4th of July? What was that like?
Well, most generally, they take off they'd probably all come in about the third, you know, the evening of the third and stay the fourth. And, well, they'd leave the night or the fifth, they'd all go back to work, you know. They'd all be gone. Might be a few lingers on that got beard up and couldn't make it. But they didn't.
Oh, that must have been a good party anyway,
though. Well, they'd have a lot of fun, you know.
Do they have any kind of games or anything? Or?
Card games. Oh, they'd have card lots of gambling, no card games.
And
then they'd have stuff going on, races and baseball games. And they had a lot of stuff going on, you know.
I was wondering, going back to that road again, I was wondering what kind of changes there were in Livengood or along that area once the road was finished.
Well, when the road, you know, when the road got in pretty good shape, then everybody started, a lot of cars started coming along, you know, and then there a lot of people come in from Fairbanks traveling back and forth, and people owned their own cars in Livengood. When they wanted stuff, they'd go to town and get it. And see, they, when the airplanes come in, two before the road, and they build their own airport there, and then they fly a lot of stuff in there, you know, airplanes. Then the mail start coming in, and Ween, they done a lot of flying in there. And then there was different private outfits, you know, Pollock and all, well, Frank Pollock and them later. And yeah, they, a lot of this, in the winter, a lot of stuff would come in there by plane, you know. Well, in the summer, then the people, passengers back and forth, you know.
Were there any Native people around Livengood during that time?
Any what?
Native people around?
There was, there wasn't many around there. Around Livengood never was a Native camp. There wasn't very few. Few'd come around there, maybe work. And then there was a lot of, they'd come in, they trapped up around Hess and from Rampart. And they'd, once in a while would come in to get stuff, you know, with their dogs, you know. But there never was, nobody ever, very few Natives lived around there, very few. In fact, when I went around there, I don't think, when I was around there, there wasn't a one lived in town. There wasn't any lived there.
But how about in Rampart?
Well, Rampart has mostly all Natives. Right under all these towns on the big rivers, you know, had a lot of Natives. Tan on Rampart, all over. Well, Stevens Village and all them, Stevens Village is practically all Natives, just a few. Like around here, there was a lot of Natives around here, but not living right in town. There was a few in town here. Just a few, but there was a lot of them lived here in Cross Jacket, and they fished all around here, around the bluff, and then up at Baker Creek, there was a lot of them. Had be four or five families during the summer, and they trapped there, and then up the around Rock Cross, and there was a lot of Natives fished around there. It's all around the river, you know, they were. There's a lot of Natives around the river them days, you know, fishing and trapping and in the winter and cutting a little steamboat wood. And
ever hear of any Natives mining?
Well, they'd go work in the mines, you know, work, you know, but there was none around here or alive and good or that had their own diggings, you know. They didn't seem to go too much for it them days. Like around Rampart, there most a lot of them guys, them Woodses and Evanses and them, they all worked in the mines, you know, on and off in the summer. And they wasn't fishing there.
They didn't try out their own, huh?
They didn't. No, I don't know of any of the towns that around this neck of the woods that had their own outfits. I think around Ruby and some of that lower river country, there was a lot of them mining on their own, you know. Not to, I don't know, they didn't seem to go for it by themselves, you know.
So from about 34 to, for a couple of years, you started traveling around in different camps, or you were trapping in the winter and stuff in the summer?
I worked for different guys. I didn't work. I fished, too. I fished several years on this river, you know, for dog feed. When I was trapping for my dogs, you know, of course, everybody was doing that then, you know.
Where'd you fish?
I fished up here on the Baker Bluff and down here at a bluff down here and right across from the landing. And
how was the fishing those?
Well, it was same as any, you know, some a lot of good years, and then you'd have lots of some years, bum years, all depends how the run was. One year we had me and my brother and was Ira Wiesner. We had four fish wheels in, and we couldn't catch it. We just catching enough fish to feed the dog team, about 15 dogs. There was no fish that year. And then the next year, one fish, there's a big run. Well, you'd get 1,000 or 2 a night. The raft would be underwater in the morning, you know, and fish running out of the box. You couldn't, one wheel, that's all you needed.
What'd your wheel look like?